We kick off hour number three of the program. This segment's brought to you by 245 Tech, your web development company right here in Knoxville. Check them out online at 245tech.com. They've got you covered for all your web development needs, content management services. Again, speed, tune up your website, or completely redo the back end, help it be safe and secure with their SWAT technology as well. It is 245 Tech. That's 245tech.com for all the information, and they're located right here on Kingston Pike in Knoxville, but can help you no matter what market you might be streaming us in, Chattanooga, Nashville, all the surrounding areas. They can obviously help you remotely and take care of your website needs that way. But if you want to meet with a person and you're in the Knoxville market, make it happen. Contact 245 Tech online at 245tech.com.
Real quick before we go on to the next thing, I wanted to talk briefly about how Damian Harris was asked the question about Butch Jones and his role as an analyst.
It's a good time for it.
Did you see the quote?
Yes. Read it.
Alabama tailback Damian Harris had to say this when asked about new team analyst Butch Jones. I don't even know what an analyst does, but I'm sure he will do it at the highest possible level.
That's such a great media day answer from a player. It's like, here's the truth, and here's what they told me to say if I ever get in a situation where I don't know what to say. You know, it's like, the truth is, I don't know. And, oh, right, but then they told me, yep, okay, I'll just say that we'll do it at the highest level.
Jeremy Pruitt got asked about,
Anthony Jennings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who's a linebacker for Alabama.
Right.
Yeah,
expected to step up, especially
or is it
after.
Anthony Jennings.
It's Anthony.
It is Anthony.
Yes.
Okay. I swear I don't think Pruitt knew who he was talking about. Did you hear the answer, Pruitt? Like, I don't know if he didn't hear the name, but he
didn't at first. He had to ask him to repeat it.
And then it's like he heard the name and it still didn't register, and he was like, oh yeah, good kid, smart, good family.
I wish he played for us.
Yeah, it was like the shortest answer he gave all day, and it did not feel like he could recognize who the guy was talking about.
It was one of the earlier questions. I just think it really threw him off. He's like, why the hell is anybody asking
this? That's what I'm saying. I think he knew who he was, but... It did not look like it. If he did, nothing in the answer suggested...
He's not expecting that whatsoever.
I'm just saying nothing in the answer or his facial expression or anything suggested that he knew who the heck he was talking
about.
I think he heard Jennings.
Year. I think he heard Jennings. And I think Pruitt heard the word Jennings and then was like, but he didn't say Juwan. Who? And then the guy said the name again, and then it doesn't matter. One of you is right, one of you is wrong, but we'll never know. It was the worst question. I think that's a worse question than asking Kirby. I think it's worse to purposely ask a coach of one team about some player they coached somewhere else because you write for a Tide website than to make a mistake and not realize that a quarterback's not on the roster anymore. Maybe it's not a worse mistake, but the second one made me much more angrier. I mean, that's ridiculous. That guy's credential should be, like, in play. Like, that's why you should have a credential revoked. Because you are, like, you're mocking the setup there for your own. Like, it's a national or regional room, I guess you want to call it that, for
right,
SEC.
But that's where they're supposed to ask about other teams and how they kind of tie on into each other, right? I mean, local media is going to ask local questions in the private session.
It's okay to ask global questions about Alabama, but to ask one random question about one kid who obviously, I mean, as you're saying, he definitely didn't pick up on it immediately. It wasn't like asking about one of the best.
It was just bad because Pruitt gave a meh answer. If Pruitt had been like, oh, yeah, I remember recruiting him and training him last year, and he's going to do this, 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 like, that would be
But
different.
He's not one of the stars of the SEC, I guess. I guess what I'm saying is if it was a transfer or if it was a...
I agree, but in Alabama, all they ever worry about is, who's going to replace this guy? Can this guy be good enough to replace this guy?
And I think if I'm running the SEC media office, I'm telling that guy, man, you're doing a really crappy job asking that question that way. You know, you at least need to broaden it out. Maybe you mention that kid's name and then loop in like other players somehow or your position or whatever. I mean, it was awful. Shout out while we're on that topic. Shout out to Lucas Panzeca.
Wow. What a performance.
That guy.
The bookend.
Was incredible. Not only did he ask smart questions, he got two in, first and last. It's like no one else had anything for Pruitt.
If only you'd have sent him. Imagine if you'd been wearing a Fan Run Radio shirt.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm taking full credit. I'm Jeremy Pruitt in this one.
I think this was one the first year they televised the question.
You know, yeah, you know how Pruitt takes credit for all those NFL guys that at other stops along the way and whatever.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing here. Panzeca, our guy.
We should make a graphic today of Lucas Panzeca, him holding the mic. recruited and initially trained by
Fox Sports Knoxville.
Fox Sports Knoxville.
Yeah. Overtime.
Not a bad gig, right?
Yeah. There you go. I don't know. It's just that was really, really poor, I thought, by that Alabama writer. Of course, you know, I wouldn't expect anything less.
Also, is Nick Saban going deaf?
Did he have trouble?
He was the only one that had trouble hearing the questions, and he had to have about five of them re-asked by the little guy at the desk.
Hmm.
He'd say, well, I can't hear him. What'd he say?
He's old. They asked him how much longer he's going to coach. He said, as long as he can do it at a high level. Well, the press conference game's starting to slip, Nick.
He was mad at the media before they even asked a question.
Oh, yeah. Don't even ask me about these quarterbacks.
The controversy that you create. No, Nick. You benched a quarterback in the national championship game. You created the controversy. Or at least the confusion. They just call it quarterback confusion. He gets so mad. What must that be like? You're just so good at what you do that every question upsets you. His whole answer to basically every question that was asked to him was like, well, we'll see. Like, he's a jerk. He's just a jerk.
Yeah.
At least Pruitt's a nice jerk.
Well, I found an old Gridiron Now post from November 5th, 2015. It's just run by the Gridiron Now staff. It's titled, Mark Richt. Jeremy Pruitt, quote, working diligently. Apparently, like you mentioned, there was Mark Richt had to tweet telling everybody that he had not fired Jeremy Pruitt. The article starts amid speculation Thursday that Georgia defensive coordinator Jeremy Pruitt will be fired. Georgia coach Mark Richt tweeted that Pruitt was busy at work preparing for Saturday's game with Kentucky. Davey, figure out who they played the week before that. So you're looking for Georgia's schedule. The game before November 5th, 2015. Obviously, they're getting ready to play Kentucky, so whoever's before that. It says, still, insiders tell Gridiron Now that there is internal dissension on Georgia's staff, centering on Pruitt, who is in his second season at Georgia, and rumors were flying that he could be fired as soon as Thursday.
Yeah, they got beat by Florida 27-3 the week before Kentucky.
That's when Georgia fans were ready to run Brian Schottenheimer out of town, the offensive coordinator at the time.
Pretty crazy that your defensive coordinator is the one in trouble on the Monday following a loss in which you scored 3 points.
Uh-huh. The week before that, no, well, there was 2 weeks. There was a bye in between Florida and Missouri, but Georgia beat Missouri 9-6.
Yeah. I want to say there was like two punt returns or a pick six or something.
Well, and here's...
What year was that, Davey?
2015. And then before Missouri, they lost to the Volunteers of Tennessee, 38-31.
It was spiraling out of control.
There's even a tweet here from David Pollack that says it could be an interesting day in Athens today. That was November 5th, 2015. So obviously he was hearing about this stuff in real time from people, I'm assuming, on Mark Richt's staff or close to people on Mark Richt's staff. There was an SI article that I'm kind of mad about because it kind of clickbaited you with what really happened between Jeremy Pruitt and Mark Richt, and it never actually answers that question. But it points out that Jeremy Pruitt was specifically hired to bring some Alabama edginess, some Florida State edginess,
mm-hmm.
some toughness, some of that Saban mindset to Georgia, pair that with the nice, lovable, family, good Christian man, Mark Richt, that was the play. Like, that's why he went to Georgia. He was supposed to be bringing in that blunt, high-achieving, high-expectation, high-accountability standard to Georgia. In fact, Jeremy Pruitt was given input on who to hire as the strength and conditioning coach for Georgia that year, according to this SI article. So basically, this was Mark Richt late in his tenure saying, I've got to do something to get us over the hump. I think what I'll do is I will try to take my style and bring in a little bit of that Saban philosophy on the defensive side of the ball. Also, from a weight room standpoint, hey, Jeremy Pruitt, who do you think would be good as a strength and conditioning coach? He recommended a guy that had worked with Cochran at Alabama to bring that style of weight training. All that. This was basically Mark Richt bringing in the expert and saying, how do you guys do it? Teach me your ways, Grasshopper.
And then not listening.
And then either not listening or listening some, but then allowing Pruitt to butt heads maybe with guys underneath him. And as you put it, losing control. Mark Richt lost control of his staff to the point where the rumors were flying that Jeremy Pruitt might get fired during the season.
Real quick, going back to that Florida game where this kind of boiled over.
Yeah.
Of Florida's, I guess, four touchdowns, three came in the first half. Two of them came on drives that were 3 yards or less.
I think I remember that game.
It was an intercept. It was a fumble at the 1 yard line from Georgia. I guess a bobbled snap or something. I remember. Florida punches it in. Then they throw a pick that's returned to the four or the three touchdown. And then they did hit a big play to Callaway, which, yeah, you're going to give up a big play to Callaway. And then they gave up a junk touchdown late in the fourth. But I don't look at this and say, man, yeah, Jeremy Pruitt really let the guys down, and Richt was mad about it. This is Jeremy Pruitt probably went in and was like, you can't give them 15, you know, you can't give them 14 points and expect me to do much if you're not going to score more than three. I can't win a game if you score more for them than you score for us.
I'd looked at that season, and when you look at the scores, it doesn't look like Georgia had a great defense. But when you look, I know statistically, though, they were like in the top 10 or 15 at least.
Because the offense was so bad.
Yeah. That's a problem with football statistics. I mean, it's a dumb Butch Jones comment, but like one offense and defense do go together. They do have to complement each other. And when one's really bad, it'll hurt the statistics, certain statistics of the other.
Yeah.
I mean, really, they didn't give up many yards in that game, it sounds like. They gave up 27 points. You look at that, and you're like, defense didn't play great. We gave up 27. It's like, well actually, 14 of them were on, you know, 5 yards of, you know, line of scrimmage yards. It's crazy.
Jordan tweets in to remind me that was the game that Mark Richt decided to start Faten Bauta.
Oh, I do remember that game very
15
well.
Of 33, 154 yards, and four picks.
I'd be cussing somebody out, too.
Oh, my gosh. I'd be livid.
What was the other option? Hudson Mason?
Bryce Ramsey.
Oh, Ramsey. Okay.
0 for 1. He was a 5-star guy, though. It sounds like they were, I mean, it's not like Florida lit the world on fire. I mean, they had Treon Harris. He was 8 of 19. But he did throw a big touchdown to Callaway, and they ran the ball well. But, like, they ran for 258. I think 100 and something of that or more was in the fourth quarter. At that point, if you're a defense and your offense is only scoring three and you've been on the field all day, probably a little dejected. Just a hunch.
I mean, for that, the year Tennessee played Georgia, I know their defense had like that 98-yard return after Jalen Hurd fumbled it. And I know we had a touchdown that was on a blocked punt.
In that game?
Wasn't that 2015? Was it Swofford?
That was 2013. You're getting your...
You sure about that?
Yeah, the Jalen Hurd fumble was in Nike. The Reeves Maven pump block was Adidas. Trust me.
Okay.
I'm a Jersey guy.
If Mark Richt had listened to Jeremy Pruitt a little more, he might not have got fired at Georgia. That's why these guys are mad. That's why Aaron Murray's mad. That's why David Pollack's mad. Their buddy, Mark Richt,
got fired because
they
probably,
because he's not Nick Saban.
They probably blame Pruitt a little bit.
Yeah, Mark Richt isn't
like
Nick Saban.
You went in and upset the apple. You shone the light on everything he was doing there and got him fired. But he didn't deserve to be fired. He was a good man.
I mean, Mark Richt lasted there longer because he was a good guy.
Yeah, well,
because he put more emphasis on, you know.
Sure.
it's suspending guys and
well,
stuff
and
like
he,
that.
And he wasn't an embarrassment.
No.
Right?
Well,
you know, he was. I'm saying he was winning enough.
Right, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And and Georgia kind of made the decision for, you know, a decade, like, yeah, we're good with 9 or 10 wins. We definitely don't want to fire him and maybe get somebody worse. And then it was almost like Jeremy Pruitt came in and just with a completely different mindset, you know, blew it up. Started drawing attention to things that Georgia didn't have and that they needed, and also kind of exposing the potential. And they had a new athletic director at the time. I think he had only been there a year or two when Pruitt got there. And I'm sure that that guy was hearing stories and probably had some private conversations with Jeremy Pruitt and Mark Richt. And I would have zero hesitation in surmising that Jeremy Pruitt likely said something along the lines of, man, if you would take this seriously, you've got everything you possibly need here. Build a damn weight room that works. Build a football facility that's 100 yards and catch up with Vanderbilt. Hire some people to take it seriously, and this thing will cruise. And it sounds like it took a little bit, but it sounds like that's exactly what ended up happening.
Oh, man, I wish I still had it up. I might somewhere. There, the athletic director, the current athletic director at Georgia, said this about Kirby Smart recently. Kirby had to teach us how to play big boy football.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm paraphrasing that a smidge, but it was like, you know, Mark Richt was just trying to go through the motions. They're so talented.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Richt's a good recruiter. People want to play for a player's coach like that. I don't know. You guys might be – our slight age difference might make this next question be viewed differently. I always viewed Florida State as kind of soft. In the 90s, they were always loaded. Always loaded. And in crunch time, Miami was the team that would go out and, like Scott Frost said, make the play, and Florida State always crumbled.
Bowden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark Richt.
Bowden, Mark Richt. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the conversation yesterday.
I know.
And then Jimbo gets there, and don't get me wrong, the Bowden way worked too.
It works because you get great players.
Right.
If you be a player's coach in a state and at a school where there's a lot of great players around.
That's what Miami did.
They want to come there.
Miami made it fun in like the 80s and 90s and even in the 2000s. Like, that was their thing. They weren't like super developed players. I think they worked hard, but it was just, we're going to be cool. We're going to be fun. Like, it can work. And frankly, Mark Richt at Miami may work infinitely better long term than it did at Georgia as far as success. But there are just certain, I don't know, certain
I mean,
situations.
Bowden had these moments, though, where, like, his guys, Pruitt's a big details guy. I think it was Callaway that said that yesterday. Might have been one of the other two players. They said all Pruitt always talks about is everybody's talented in the SEC. It's going to be attention to detail and executing that makes the difference. And that's what we're focused on every single day. That's the stuff Mark Richt's teams didn't do well and Bobby Bowden's teams never did well. In crunch time, they couldn't handle the details. They couldn't execute that last little bit, and it probably cost Bowden about 2 national championships. Mm-hmm.
I'd say it cost Richt maybe 2 or 3 shots at it at Georgia.
Yeah.
Because they would drop that one game where it's like, dude, how?
Yeah.
Like 2004, don't get me wrong, that Tennessee team was pretty good. That team had no business going into Georgia, number 3, with David Green, Fred Gibson, David Pollock, all those great running backs. Tennessee had no business winning that game. They held that offense to 14 points. They somehow scored 19 and staved off a 35-yard chunk to the end zone at the end to win it. If Georgia wins that game with what was probably Mark Richt's best team, 2004, senior David Pollock, senior David Green, junior or senior Fred Gibson, great running backs. I mean, they were loaded. I can't remember the running back they had at the time. They were calling him the next Herschel Walker. He was good. They scored 14 points against Tennessee. That game kept them out of Atlanta, where they would have had a rematch against Auburn, who frankly smoked them earlier in the year, kind of like they did Tennessee, 29-6 or
24-6.
24-6.
Yep.
If they don't lose to Tennessee at home on a 17-game home winning streak, they go to Atlanta for the rematch Tennessee played pretty well in that game, still lost by 10. Georgia had could have easily beaten Auburn in their undefeated season in 2004. And I know Auburn went undefeated and didn't play for the national championship that year, so maybe Georgia doesn't, but maybe they do because they started higher. They started the season number two or three. The Auburn's problem that year was they were unranked, and the BCS punished you for that.
Yeah.
You couldn't be unranked and climb to the top and play for the national championship because the computers punished you for not being good enough in the preseason, which is crazy. Georgia, if they beat Auburn in a rematch in Atlanta, it's possible they play for a national championship that year, and they lost to that Tennessee team. Who, don't get me wrong, that Tennessee team was pretty good, but not that good. Like, they beat a Florida team that wasn't that good. They lost to Notre Dame when Ainge hurt his shoulder, and then scraped by against Kentucky and Vanderbilt. Lost to Auburn, beat the snot out of Texas A&M because Texas A&M sucked. But like that's they did that every year for a stretch of time there, where they, like you said, they lost it early because they didn't come out of the gates prepared, or they had guys suspended. Or they would just have one of those, you know, how did we lose to Georgia Tech this year kind of games. That's what Pruitt was saying. Like, you have all this talent. Yeah, you can win 10. You can win 9 right now on talent. But take it seriously and win 12. Take it seriously and hang a banner. Raise a trophy. Take it seriously and win the title.
Yeah, I mean, they just always have a hang-up, right? They either the Gamecocks get them early.
Georgia-ing before it was Clemson-ing.
They always struggle against Florida in the cocktail party. I was looking at the 2002 team, which won the SEC championship. It was the cocktail party that got them. They lost. They were ranked fifth in the country, undefeated. They actually went on to win every other game on the schedule the rest of the year, and Florida got them 20-13 when the Gators were ranked 22nd. You know, that wasn't like a top five Florida team. They couldn't handle. In the biggest moments, when you haven't preached that, when you haven't had that accountability to the details every single day, in the big moments, you're going to have people that just spaz out a little bit and can't stick to the details when the pressure cooker is on you. And, I mean, hell, if you want to just boil it down to one thing, look at Florida State's kicker in the 90s. Well, you know, I mean...
I mean, no.
Boom.
It's a bad example. Alabama didn't exactly have great kicker success for quite some time.
Well, I just remember Florida State always being there, and it took forever for Bobby Bowden to win one, and then he did get one more before he rode off in the sunset. I mean, but everything was set up for him to win, you know, at least two more national championships along the way.
I do wonder, and maybe this, I think, is the fair point, because like, where would you put Philip Fulmer if – I don't know, if Saban's one end of the scale and Rick's the other.
That's a great question.
I would certainly think I have Fulmer closer to Rick.
Do Saban and Bowden. I mean, Bowden won two natties.
Okay.
I mean, you know what I mean? I just think that's two more equally, like,
all right, that's fine.
Winning guys. The players coach, it's like Pete Carroll versus Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And Nick Saban versus Bobby Bowden.
Yeah. I don't know if I would say it's Bowden, but sure, like, that works. It's fine for me for now. Just Nick Saban being the...
Rick learned everything he did from Bowden.
Sure.
That's why
I mean, that's fine. I just think being at Florida State makes it feel a little weird. It's a little easier to do it there than Fulmer at Tennessee. I don't know. Like, that's why it just makes it tough.
Yeah, sure.
But it's fine.
It doesn't matter.
Is Fulmer, like, splitting the difference, but maybe a lean towards the Bowden tree?
I think so.
Just stylistically.
People might hate me for this. I think Spurrier proved that Fulmer is much more the player's coach, and there were big moments where Fulmer probably could have been in a national title hunt a little more often, but in some big moments, he had some guys that would do the same type of stuff. I
buy that. So maybe at least that part of it is fair. Is it possible that Pruitt would be too Saban for Fulmer? Is it possible there could be a clash a little bit there?
If they were co-workers, like offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, I could see it being a big issue. But one's a lot older.
I tend to agree.
One's a lot older. One's a lot more experienced. Fulmer's seen it all now. He's had time to even reflect on that. Hell, there's probably at least a few things Fulmer looks back on and says, I wish I'd done that differently.
Oh, without question. Yeah.
So,
well, Fulmer had his, the most success when he was with Cutcliffe. Mm-hmm. And Cutcliffe is a detail addict,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
He loves you. Like, he's got kind of the mix, which is ironic because David Cutcliffe from Alabama. That's where he, I think he played there.
Wow.
I know he coached there for a little bit. I think he played there.
I think he was one of the few to not play, one of the few head coaches.
Oh, you might be
play.
Right. You might be right. He may have just coached there first. But Cutcliffe, he's more Saban than Bowden, without question. He's a teacher.
Yeah.
He forms. I think he's better at forming relationships than Nick Saban is. Of course, I also think Nick Saban might be a robot. But Fulmer had success when Cutcliffe was around. Right? I mean, if you look at the timeline, you know, early 90s to 98, you're waxing people. 99, 2000, frankly, both underperforming years. 2001, you caught lightning in a bottle. And then you fell into a little bit of a hole there. And then you got back in 2006-07 when you got Cutcliffe back, and you thought, wow, we're heading in the right direction again. Then he leaves to go to Duke, and all the wheels fall off. So I think maybe, I don't know, maybe Fulmer recognized, you know what? You need some tough guys. You need to have guys who are going to outwork people and stick to the details, and maybe you sacrifice some of the fun and some of the stuff to make sure in the fourth quarter when the game's on the line, your team doesn't do something stupid, that they don't crumble in the moment. Which,
you almost want your players so focused on their job that they don't realize it's the national championship
game.
Yeah,
game score, fans don't matter.
That's the Saban approach. I want my guys so focused on knowing his read in this situation that he doesn't think, oh, crap, this is Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the national championship.
Yeah.
You just want them so focused on their job, it doesn't matter where the game's being played, what the crowd noise is, what the moment is. And Saban's been able to do that for the most part at a really high level. The other way works. This is fascinating. Most of the time, the bigger picture players, coach style guys are more CEO types. And the teachers, the detail guys, are more specialists in one area of the football,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Which obviously plays out with Pruitt, Saban, Richt, Fulmer, all those types of things. We'll come back with more. Stick with us. You're listening to 3 and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville. This segment's brought to you by Knoxville Stone Interiors, 3900 Middlebrook Pike. Over 8,000 kitchen makeovers and counting at Knoxville Stone Interiors. Check them out online, knoxstoneinteriors.com. God, that's a great question about Philip Fulmer. He was a player's coach, right? That's why the whole scene in The Blind Side is up. Fulmer's here. It's over. People relate to this guy. And yeah, the kids love him.
That was also his problem down the stretch. He didn't have enough of, well, we got to do whatever it takes to keep winning. He was his loyalty kind of cost him, right?
A little bit,
you know? He tried to hang on to the 90s a little too long. Tried to hang on to good defense and run the football, but then all the other offenses started changing, right? You had mm-hmm. the Urban Meyers coming in. You had Richt kind of going a little bit more up-tempo and spread at Georgia, and it kind of caught up to him.
It's weird. I kind of think I think most of the – or a lot of the earlier – good coaches were more CEO types, more kind of players, coaches, at least early in my lifetime. Maybe the first kind of wave of great coaches were all like super tough guys. I mean, you know, General Nealon, you know,
yeah.
You know, Bear Bryant, Joe Paterno, guys that like just demanded you be perfect all the time, every time, like this is the way. But then it seemed like early in my football fandom, you know, late 80s, 90s, there was this switch. A lot of the really successful guys were players' coaches. They made it fun. It was they all recruited really, really well. Now it almost feels like there's a switch back to where, like, first of all, you better be an expert, and then you better be able to recruit and do the other things like that. I mean, Nick Saban is obviously a defensive mastermind first, and when you ask him about, or when you think about him as a recruiter, like, people don't go play for Nick Saban because they just love hanging out with Coach Saban. He's so fun to be around.
Right.
You know, Dabo Swinney's doing it the other way. And Davey pointed out that
I think it's just the balance shifts, right?
Yeah.
This works. Someone does something different, people like it. Someone does something different, people like it.
Brent Venables signed a 5-year, $11 million extension to be the remain as the defensive coordinator at Clemson. Like, to me, maybe Venables on defense is kind of Dabo's, like, you know, top lieutenant, expert, X's and O's guy. Has been rumored for some head coaching jobs, not taking them. So, I don't know. You kind of have to have both to make it work. I don't know. Pruitt seems to have a little bit of that. The players like him. You know, David Pollack's comments, Aaron Murray's comments, none of that has to do with players.
In fact, Georgia players said the opposite when Mark Richt was fired. Here's a couple real quick. Jonathan Abram, a safety, said, if the media wants to know anything, tell them they got to keep Jeremy Pruitt. We want Pruitt, man, said linebacker Davin Bellamy. Look at our stats on defense, said Leonard Floyd. We are top 10 in every category. We got to get Pruitt back. I mean, these are guys that just saw their head coach get fired, and their first response is, can we please keep the defensive coordinator who just got here?
Right.
We've heard what the Alabama guys have said, you know, after they win a championship and are going pro and are asked about Jeremy Pruitt, glowing reviews. I read you some of the stuff, Malik Wilson said earlier. It just, I don't know. Seems like it's a good point by you. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but he has maybe a little bit of both. Somehow he does it in a way that is demanding and, you know, high stress, at least what he wants from you. But then in the end, you're like, man, I really like playing for that guy.
I mean, that would be the perfect combination. And I think that's at least his style. Now, whether it works or not, well, you know, there's a million factors.
Ramiq Wilson played linebacker for Pruitt. I think only it might have been 2 years at Georgia. And after all the Mark Richt stuff goes down, some Georgia media were trying to find some dirt on Jeremy Pruitt. So they did an interview with Ramiq Wilson, and they asked, has he ever been nice to anybody? Wilson's answer was, he shows flashes of it. But Wilson, the team's all-SEC senior linebacker, spoiled the image of Pruitt a bit by revealing that behind the scenes, and get ready to be shocked, Pruitt is not so bad. Here's what Wilson said. Coach Pruitt pushes us. He's not going to take nothing. He's not going to take less from you. He wants the best from you. If you don't give him the best, you're not going to play. He made that clear. He's going to play the best 11 guys. He always says, it's true. No matter if you're a walk-on or not, he's going to play whoever makes the most plays and buys into his system. So he's changed our culture real quick. Roquan Smith, I think we all know who that is, called Jeremy Pruitt a high-energy coach who wears his hard hat to work every day. Pruitt was one of Smith's lead recruiters, and he said, I think they're getting a great guy. He really cares about his players. Maybe you're on to something. Maybe he's the perfect blend of, I'm going to mother bleep you up and down this field, but then after practice, you're my guy.
I mean, I don't think he does that much, though. I think they just respect that he's all business. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's likable. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I don't think they love Pruitt because he, like, becomes their buddy after he pushes them. I think they just know that he's pushing them for the right reason.
Fair.
You know, and I think they do realize that I do think he cares about them. You know, that genuineness that we're looking for after being, you know, scarred by Butch Jones. I mean, Butch Jones would kind of tell you he was putting the kids first, but it was pretty obvious he was always putting Butch Jones first.
Yeah.
I think Jeremy Pruitt, I don't think he hides it. I think he says, hey, I'm going to push you because you being the best you can be helps me, but me pushing you to B, to perform at your maximum level also helps you. It's a mutually beneficial way of going about coaching you as a player and coaching our football team. And maybe, I mean, the fact that Philip Fulmer probably does trend or did trend as a coach the other way a little bit probably actually helps with that dynamic. But you're not, I mean, the issues they had at Georgia, and this the Sports Illustrated article pointed this out, is because they tried to do it halfway. You know, at Georgia, it's like, okay, we've got kind of the nice players coach, Mark Richt, everybody's having fun, kumbaya, but we don't quite have that edge we need to get over the hump and win a national championship. Let's try and bring in a Saban guy and kind of add that to the mix. And it just really doesn't work that way.
I'll say this, too. If you're a guy who thinks like that, if that is how you are wired to do the best all the time, no matter what, it was probably very, very hard on Jeremy Pruitt to then be put into a situation where that's not the case.
Yeah.
Like, he probably felt pretty helpless in a situation like that, pretty frustrated, pretty angry. I'm not surprised that it would boil over in year two in some, you know, disrespectful outbursts. But guys like that, probably good that he's a head coach because now he gets to pick everybody that's around him and align them with himself. Right? I mean, I don't know. I always felt like Butch got to do that, and in a way, he insulated himself, you know, by hiring friends who, you know, didn't have necessarily the credentials. Some of them I didn't even think particularly were good coaches, but I don't think Jeremy Pruitt is going to hire guys because he's friends. I think Jeremy Pruitt's going to say, hey, when we were at Georgia, we both wanted the same thing. Why don't you come with me to Tennessee and let's do it on our own.
Do it our way.
Yeah. Hey, when I worked with you at Florida State, you had the same mentality as me. I need a guy to come coach safeties and special teams. Charles Kelly, why don't you come to Tennessee?
We did that at a radio station once, you and me.
Right.
What would it be like if we could just run the show the way we wanted it?
And here we are.
There you go. Cheers. Yeah, no, that all makes sense. It worked out best for Georgia because they finally just said, okay, we're done. We've done the Mark Richt way for a long time. It's worked to a point. Now we're ready to just take a risk and do it all the Nick Saban way. And Kirby Smart's a Georgia guy. He'll buy into that. Let's go. And to this point, they're on track to do exactly, I mean, hell, they in year two were better than the Mark Richt teams. And so it worked for them. Mark Richt got to go somewhere else where no matter what way they were doing it, it was really bad. So his way will be a big step up
still
for
better.
Miami.
Right, yeah.
And Jeremy Pruitt ultimately went back, made some more connections with you know, coaches, and held on to those connections from Georgia, gets the opportunity here, and now he's able to do it here the way he wants to do it. And that was Greg McElroy's point yesterday. Like, none of this backstory really matters now. It's all about, that's what Feinbaum was saying. It's a line of demarcation. It's a new regime now here. We're doing it this way at Tennessee.
Yeah, one of his early questions Pruitt was asked was, you know, hey, the last 6 months, but then certainly the last 10 years have been pretty intense at the university. Like, how do you even try to make sense of all that? And the first thing he said was, I don't really care. All I can talk about is the last, you know, since I got here. And then what comes after today? What comes next? So I don't know. It's a little coach speaky. I'm obviously he's aware and has been informed and probably has opinions on it. But I do think that you said this yesterday, maybe even off the air, that like he's an eyes forward kind of guy. That's probably exactly what we need. Like I don't think Pruitt today is like, oh, how did I do at SEC Media Days? You think it was okay? What did I wear the right suit? Did I look okay? I think Pruitt's like, all right. Practice starts in 2 weeks. We got a lot of work to do. Are the guys working out? You know, I don't think things linger with him. Unless it's a, you know, we played bad. I need to fix that. How can I fix that type of thing? I think the things that matter to him matter because they're going to make his program better. Not, did I wear the right speckled jacket at SEC Media Days? Was my tie cool? You know, I just think he's the periphery, which Butch Jones loved, right?
Mm-hmm.
The band, the fans, the music, the colors, the lights, the graphics. Pruitt's like, I just want to play football. I just want to worry about football. I'll do my engagements. I'll do my obligations, but I'm focused 100% on football. And once I get everybody into that mindset, things are going to be just fine.
Final segment of the program, and the whole show has been about the SEC. Our eyes on the SEC, always brought to you by IXL, the official eye care of 3 and Out. Check them out online at IXLTN.com. They're located at 715 Callahan Drive. This, we mentioned it earlier. We're talking about, it was in relation to Davey's season prediction. Houston, you mentioned that we need to get back to the fact that you don't think Missouri's offense is going to be as good as it has been, despite the fact that they still have Drew Locke. Here's what Drew Locke said yesterday about new offensive coordinator Derek Dooley. Quote, "He yelled at me one time for changing how my sandwich was ordered. He says the reason they're putting it on the menu is because they've made it that way and they think that's the exact way it should be eaten. I've actually started doing that, and he's right."
Glad to see Dooley's focused on the right things this time, not the junk.
Was the how to load the dishwasher? I can't remember if that was a Tennessee thing or a Dallas Cowboys thing, but that was always my funniest one until
there was
this.
Shower etiquette, yeah. Was a Derek Dooley thing.
That was here. I think it was that I heard at the Cowboys he got onto a kitchen staffer at the facility for loading the like industrial dishwasher wrong. Because that's
he didn't
really
like
important.
The trash cans in the practice facility. I think he redesigned the Anderson training facility like 15 times. Like,
I never know if they tell me the truth.
I think he's the one in charge of, you know, this column needs to be 5 feet to this side. He's a weirdo. But I got to listen to Drew Locke yesterday talk about, you know, what Derek Dooley's going to do to this offense. Because remember, they had, what's his name? Josh Heupel? Is that who was there last year calling the plays? He took a head coaching gig.
I believe. Didn't he take over for Scott Frost?
Yeah, that's right. Went to UCF. Yeah. And it was really, really weird to hear Drew Locke yesterday. The guy really tried to sell it, but he does not sound pleased with the new offense. You know, this is a guy who can throw it 80 yards, who has had games in the 4 or 5, I don't know, he might have even had a 600-yard game at one point last year. They had to have a bunch of yards to beat some really bad teams. And apparently now Derek Dooley is bringing in a ball control style offense. More eye formation, less tempo, more running the football, more play action. Drew Locke, man, he really put on a smile. But you could kind of tell that he's a little worried. And they were like, oh, well, what all is changing? And he was like, a lot. And they asked him, how much have you picked up, essentially? He's like, we got a long way to go, I think. If you're Missouri, is this a good idea?
Why would you change that offense? I mean, I know you kind of have to when you get a new person, but
the thought process is we were in games that we could have won last year, but because we couldn't not run tempo, because we couldn't milk the clock, because we couldn't pick up first downs running the football, because we couldn't control the ball when we needed to, we gave other teams opportunities to get back in the game, and we lost games we should have never lost. And I'm sure that Barry Odom is saying, please stop going 3 and out and putting this bad defense back on the field to continue to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably a joint decision of, hey, protect the defense, protect the ball. Problem is, you're not going to be scoring nearly as much, and I don't think your defense's main problem is rest. Just a hunch. I think Missouri, after listening to Drew Locke, I started thinking maybe Tennessee can get that one, just because they're going to be doing things so different in a low-scoring game. Sorry, favors Tennessee. A low-scoring game against a Jeremy Pruitt defense, I'm saying that favors Tennessee, especially since you get it at home. I know that's a game most people are already thinking is at least possible to win, but knowing that they're not going to be trying to hang 60 on you, I don't know.
I don't think you build a team by holding hands and singing Kumbaya.
Missouri's so hard to figure out from last year. I mean, they lost, 5 in a row. in the middle part of their schedule. Some are pretty.
Did they win their last five?
Explainable. Some aren't. They did. They won their last five. They won their last
six
regular season games, and then lost a bowl game against Texas. They're hard to figure out, and they're probably the most one of the most variable teams on Tennessee's schedule with like how trying to predict how Missouri's going to play.
But that's what's weird is what we have in our head. We're like, oh, that's going to be tough. They are changing the offense to ground and pound, ball control, play action. Now they've got a quarterback who can chunk it, but
yikes, that could be a rough transition.
Why would you do that to a senior quarterback?
Doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
I mean, they've been high octane, high tempo.
When did they hire him?
Ever since they came to the SEC.
Had the deadline to go into the draft already passed? It had, hadn't it?
I didn't think so, but
oh, okay.
Maybe you're right. Talk Sports is next. John Reed, Cody McClure. Then it's optional with Trey Wallace.
Then it's optional.
Yeah.
Then it's
The Drive and Overtime. We got you covered. More local programming here in Knoxville than any other station. Stick with us right here for more Fan Run Radio.